you know, it's really strange. It's like I was getting dressed this morning and I went in to put a watch on. I have three watches and all of them had dead batteries. I know. What does that signify? Time stops for me. I like that one. But the whole time, not only that, but we have a house filled with, you know, clocks that have batteries in them. And the one that I look at a lot, it was in the process of stopping too. So it was about 20 minutes behind because I'm thinking, oh, I have all this time, you know, I can take my time doing the rest of stuff. And then I happened to glance at another clock and I went, oh, what is this? So I had a lot, well, I did have time and then I didn't. So it, and if, when stuff like that happens, it's like, it's so disconcerting for me because I keep thinking that everything in my life always works except when there are batteries. So, at any rate, so today I'm going to be talking about, I don't know, the first, okay, so we'll call it Keeping It Simple, but we'll do the first holiday card. How's that? For those of you that are new with our congregation, we are in the process of going what I call paperless. So, we don't have all of the stuff. Or I don't have all the stuff that I used to have up here. So I used to have all of these little cards that would cue me as to when to do what, where, and when. So I guess last Sunday I missed it completely and did today's sermon last Sunday. So I'm wondering what I missed on here. Do you think I missed anything important? Probably not. Oh, you want to do a... You want to do a repeat? We can do that. We can do that. So at any rate, part of the process of keeping it simple is that, you know, there's times when, you know, I have to look at my life and things that are going on around me and wondering, do I even know how to do that anymore? Now, I don't know about your lives, but I have suddenly become very complex with everything that happens. And, you know, years and years ago, I think I did this probably when I first started in classwork, and it was a combination of words that my teacher used to use. He would say something like, you need to remember, and I paraphrase this into my saying, which is, you need to keep it simple, fun, and easy. Well, I have said this for this month, it's 27 years. So, you know, and I thought, why can't I remember to keep everything simple, fun, and easy now? So that when I'm going through my life and when I need to remember to relax or when I need to remember that just because everybody else is going nuts doesn't mean that I have to. Or if I get caught up in the frenzy of, say, traffic or standing in line or all the stuff that we do at this time of, you know, the year, is to remember that I can change the rule on this. I can do it differently. But it's not until I get all caught up in it and get all kind of half frazzled do I remember that I can do it differently. And of course, differently means is that we think again. Now, when we talk about how to put the law to work in our lives, let's review for those of you that are new. What does law mean? Mind in action. So when your mind is in action, what are you doing? So when we talk about putting the law to work for us, what we're really saying is think about what it is that's going on and then make sure that whatever it is you're thinking, you're very clear about it because it's our thoughts that are going to create our world. Your world and your world and yours and then mine. So again, it's like getting caught up in all of this stuff. You know, the first thing I usually do is say, wait a minute, Cindy, what have you been thinking about? Well, this, you know. I go, that shouldn't have caused this, and, you know, thinking about this, that shouldn't have caused that. But then what I realized what happened is that I'm doing a lot of quick thinking about a lot of things, and so consequently, life just speeds up until all of your clocks stop. And then it's like, whoa, yes, yeah, just stop. And I thought, well, that's okay, I can do that too. So we have to, I have to remember, and of course, that's one of the reasons why I got into this business, is for me to remember what it is I need to know. So as far as I'm concerned, what I'm saying today has to do about me. It has nothing to do with you. although some of you think that I handpick you and say this one's for you or you, and it's not really true. So when we talk about, you know, this holiday season, and we had a conversation after church last Sunday. Some of us were sitting in the bookstore and we were talking, and you know, I was saying there's something about this holiday, this Christmas, that since my teacher never celebrated Christmas, I got into the habit of not celebrating Christmas. Now, granted, my family still has the tree up and we still exchange gifts and all of that stuff, but we don't necessarily believe in the traditional Christmas. And yes, somewhere along the line, we were taught that, you know, the reason for the season is the birth of Jesus. Well, we don't necessarily believe in Jesus as the Son of God. We believe in Jesus as the great example, that everything that he did in all of the teachings of the New Testament, we can too. We are all sons and daughters of God. So last Sunday, we were talking, you know, I was telling everybody in the bookstore, I said, everybody, what, three of us that can fit in there? There's something about Christmas that just irritates me. I don't like celebrating it. And so Alejandro happened to be involved in that conversation. He says, well, of course, because we in religious science don't have to wait until Christmas to get what we want. And I went, duh. We get to think and create it, whatever it is that we want, all year long. We don't have to wait for some special holiday to be able to request something new and different in our lives. So what we do in celebrating Christmas is look at it from a standpoint of a little allegorically, maybe metaphorically, if that's those two words. I don't even know if those are words or not. But we're going to look at it as an allegory and as a wonderful story that may or may not be true. And see, that's the problem with myth. Because myth is something that is continuous. It's ongoing. And it's true because we believe it to be true. So when we talk about this myth and creating, you know, a Jesus to come and save us, we're kidding ourselves. Because let me tell you something, at least in my estimation, Jesus doesn't care anymore. Nor does God. From the standpoint that God loves us but does not care how we make our decisions in our life, because the law, which is how we think, and we know that the universe and God and all of this around us always says yes to whatever it is we're thinking. So that when we're thinking, this is all just a bunch of nonsense, the law says, you're right, and sets up all of these situations that will convince you that this doesn't work. However, the converse is true, too, so that when you say, wow, this is really great, this is going to work, then what happens is that the law or mind sets up all of these wonderful examples of making it true for us. So whatever it is that you decide is true in your life is exactly what's going to show up in your life, whether you believe it or not. I had a telephone call this week, and it was my friend in Arizona who said, put on your counselor hat. And I said, okay, it's on. So she got to talking about some of the things that are going on with her, and she was, you know, and I said, wait a minute, what? Tell me about your thinking around this. And so she got to telling me some of the things she was thinking about. And I said, one of the things we have to remember, and this is rule number one or five, whatever it is in your rule book, is that not all of your thoughts are true. Not everything that we think of is true. Because we get so caught up in the stuff of life that suddenly it's like we're going along with it, and all of a sudden we think, oh, yeah. And it's really, oh, no. So we have to guard not only our thoughts, but guard what it is that's going on in our minds and through our minds. And especially at, you know, holidays and seasons. And of course, a lot of us as religious scientists do really well until it comes to our families. Because a lot of us are the only religious scientists in the family. And so You know, my mom used to say, now, what is it that you believe again? You know, and my dad would say, does that mean you're going to go to heaven? And, you know, a lot of the other stuff. And I'd always say, yes, Dad, we're going to go to heaven, but I'm not sure I'm going to show up at the same heaven you're going to show up at. He said, well, which one are you going to go to? So, and it took everything I had to say, not the one you're going to. Or to say something like, not the one mom's at, you know. But at any rate, you know, because my mom was thoroughly convinced that when she went to heaven, she was going to hit the pearly gates, the streets were paved with gold, and she was going to get in. And I thought, what if I don't? And then I found Religious Science, and I thought, oh, thank goodness, I don't have to worry about that anymore. You know? Because we believe in an afterlife. We believe that there is only life, and that's all there is. Not necessarily the one in heaven. We get to, you know, and it's interesting because in one of the classes, whether it was ministerial school or practitioner, I don't know, but we had to write an essay on, you know, what do we think immortality is and how are we going to, where are we going to end up after this life? And so I decided that because of that essay is that I don't know where I'm going to end up on the afterlife. But I do know that it's going to be probably the same thing that we're experiencing here. The only difference is that I knew I didn't believe in reincarnation and that I certainly didn't want to have to come back and redo what I didn't get done this time. So I decided that life is an upward spiral and that there's only life and that there's only evolution in an upward direction, and that that's where I wanted to end up. So whether I end up in heaven or not, I can wave at you as you go by. How's that? So when we talk about how we relate to, you know, this into the holiday, is that we have to take this experience. And since we believe that Christmas is kind of a myth for us, is to be able to use what I'm going to call this morphic energy field that's created right now, and to be able to create more of what it is that we want in life. To take this energy that is here where everybody else, and of course, you know, I love watching little kids. There is no doubt in their mind that they're going to get what they want. And I can remember years ago, and this is back to my days of having to teach junior church in the church I grew up in, that we had one little kid who came in very excited one Sunday. It was several Sundays before Christmas. And he came up to me. He said, Cindy, I'm going to get a bike. I said, cool. Is this your first two-wheeling? He said, yes. I said, there's 10 feet of snow out there. I grew up in North Dakota. I said, there's 10 feet of snow out there. He said, doesn't matter. It's going to work anyway. So I said, oh, cool. So, you know, I saw him several times, and you know, every time I'd see him, he'd be riding his bike, his imaginary bike. You know, he's tooling down the streets, and he's doing all the things that kids do on bikes. So I happened to run across his dad one day, and I said, I'm really excited for Joey. He said, what about Joey? I said, he's getting a bike for Christmas. He said, no, he's not. I don't know where he got that idea from, but he's not getting the bike. I said, well, you need to tell him that then. He says, no, I don't. I'm going to let him believe it. So we used to do the Christmas Eve service at our church. And then it was traditional in my family that we would go to the Christmas Eve service and then go home and open up our presents. So I see Joey. And I said, Joey, do you have your bike? He says, I don't know where they hid it. I said, well, are you going to get it tonight or are you going to get it tomorrow morning? He said, well, if I get it tonight, it's because the family gave it to me. But if I get it tomorrow morning, it's because Santa brought it. And I said, cool. So I said, so who do you want it to be from? He said, Santa. I'm willing to wait another day. I said, okay. So needless to say, on Christmas morning, I was really curious as to whether he got his bike or not. So the next Sunday, I couldn't wait for Joey to come into church. So all of a sudden, you know, I can hear him. We used to do Journey Church in the basement of the church, and I could hear this clunk, 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 running down the stairs. And, of course, rule number one with little kids is to walk. Don't ever run in church, right? So I could tell he was clomping down those stairs. He could hardly wait to get there. So he comes running up and he says, "Cindy, I got my bike." I said, "So who gave it to you?" He said, "Santa did." I said, "Do we know who Santa is in your life?" He says, "You know, I can't quite figure that one out." I said, "So does it matter to you?" He says, "Oh yeah, I'll find out before too much time goes by." So every time I would see him after that, I'd say, "Who got your bike for you?" He said, "You know, Santa's making me a believer in Santa." So he never did find out who his bike was from. And I thought, isn't it interesting? Now, when you talk to little kids, when they want something, there's no doubt in their mind that somewhere along the line, they're going to figure out how to get it. Whether it's a neighbor, whether it's an uncle, whether it's anonymous, they're going to get their bike. His dad was convinced he wasn't going to get it because his dad wasn't going to get it for him. But, you know, we need to, during this holiday season, be like little kids and allow our minds and our hearts to open up to a belief system that knows that no matter what it is that's going on, it's going to work for us. That it doesn't matter who you get the bike from, the bike is going to show up on Christmas morning. And if we can get, you know, that so set in our minds so that it becomes what I'm going to call a knowing system rather than a belief system. And the difference between that is, you know, we talk about belief. We're talking about theory. You know, I can stand up here and tell you all the wonderful things about religious science, and you can nod, yes, that's fine. Yes, I believe that. But until you have your bicycle experience on Christmas morning, you're never going to know for sure. But once you have that experience, now you know it works. And then that's all it takes is one experience. You get it, and then you can relate on or rely on that experience from this point forward. So when we talk about a knowing system, it's kind of like having faith, but I think just a little bit more. Instead of having faith, trust in God. And instead of just knowing about God, trust in God. To trust your own thinking, to trust everything that's going on in your mind, because we know that your mind and my mind is God's mind, and we all think with one mind, and that's where we make our one connection. So we know that when we are thinking, and this is thinking the way Ernest Holmes called right thinking. For years, I was bugged about that. What does right thinking mean? I mean, and how do I know if I'm thinking if it's right or wrong, if we're talking that kind of thinking? And the right thinking he's talking about is thinking the same thing time after time so that you get out of belief, you get out of faith, and you absolutely get into knowing and trusting. So that when you think in terms of getting your bike on Christmas morning, there's no doubt in your mind it shows up. Now, it may take till Easter, but it doesn't matter. It's going to show up. See, now part of the reason as to why it takes a little bit longer is based on how deep our trust is, how deep our faith is. Because a lot of times, and I can remember when I first ran across this, when my teacher said, you know, you get to have whatever it is you want in your life, but you have to think about it first. So decide what it is you want to experience. So I said, okay, what do I want? I don't know. I knew what I didn't want, but I couldn't state what I wanted. Now, that's a little bit tougher. So when you decide what it is you want to experience, that's right thinking. When you decide what you don't want, that's wrong thinking. Because I'll tell you what, the God is always going to say yes, whether you've got right thinking going or whether you've got wrong thinking going. And how many times do we have, you know, a situation set up for ourselves where we're concerned or worried about something? Or had another situation recently where someone called and said, my husband just got diagnosed with cancer. And I said, don't even talk about it anymore. Because the more you talk about cancer, what happens is like it expands, because the more we focus on something, the bigger it gets. Because that's the I don't want experience. So I said, you know, when you're at your doctor's office or when your husband's talking to doctors, go ahead and have whatever conversation you want. But as soon as you walk out of that office, you think in terms of health, high health, and only health going through his body. So that when we talk about this power of God flowing in through, around, and for us, that it can take and get rid of whatever cancer cells are there and to restore the body into whole health. If, however we think about God, and I think about God as being all-knowing, all-wise, and everywhere present, so that the same God or creator that created me is the same God that created me perfect, whole, and complete as I was born. So that's what we need to think about ourselves when we are experiencing our health challenges. So I said to her, you need to tell your husband as many times a day as you need to that he's perfect, whole, and complete, is experiencing high health, and this is just a glitch in the process of life. So she said, okay. So we've been doing treatment work for him, so we'll see how this works out. But for most people, when we talk about having this experience of cancer, that, you know, it's no longer the death toll that it used to be years ago. That they have come up with so many new ways of treating cancer and illness and stuff that's going on that people come through it. And the interesting thing about it is that I saw another interview on TV recently where this woman said, thank God for my breast cancer. And I thought, thank God for my breast cancer. You know, I had to stop and think about that for a minute. And she says, because had I not gotten it, I would have continued on with my life the way it was, and I would probably be dead by now. Because when we have those kinds of wake-up calls, they make us stop. Time stops for us. And we have to take stock of what's going on. What do we need to get rid of? How do we need to relax? How do we need to uncreate the stress we have in our lives? You know, and all the other stuff that comes up. So it is time for us in this time, this morphic field, that if there's something going on with you, decide that it's this time that you're going to be healed. If there's something that you want to experience in life, use this morphic field to create it. And do it when you're standing in line listening to the carols, Wally World, or, you know, HEB, who, you know, you get more merry for less money. You know, all their captions. You know, do whatever you need to do to put yourself in that state of mind to allow yourself to experience a life that is bigger, better, greater than you ever thought you could do. See, one of the things we can do with this morphic field is we can create our dreams in such a way that go beyond our wildest imagination. I was watching a movie on Lifetime last night, and the ending song was, you know, is there, you know, it's Lifetime always has some really sappy endings, and it was the typical, you know, girl gets guy after going through two guys and deciding which one she really loved, and it's, you know, they come walking down the aisle, and so it's the happy ending, and the end song is You Are Amazing. And I thought, wow, they're singing this song for me. I am totally amazing. I show up in life in a way that allows me to be amazing in everything that I do. And of course, they were doing the song like they were supposed to be singing it to each other, but I took it that they were singing it for me. So I got so enthused about being amazing, because this goes along with what Ernest Holmes tells us, that we were created perfect, whole, and complete. How about perfect, whole, and complete, and amazing to boot? I mean, I love that concept. So when we think of ourselves as being amazing, what happens is that we elevate not only our thoughts, but our personal vibration to such a degree that we can feel all this amazement going through ourselves. We can feel the health vibrations just tingling. Can you feel it? Well, think a little harder. Feel it tingling through your body and allow it to be who and what you are. See, now, I don't know about you in your life, but when I was growing up, you know, my parents did everything they could to, I won't call, you know, well, maybe I will, with my mother. She did everything she knew how to do everything but kill my spirit. You know what that feeling is? In other words, don't show off too much. You know, don't be too happy. You know, calm down. And kids are supposed to be seen and not heard and all of that stuff. Well, when you grow up in that kind of an environment, you come out of that kind of pulled into yourself. And I can remember when I first left home and got to California, one of the things I got into was some sales work. Well, you know, when you're selling anything, you cannot be withdrawn. You really have to be out there. It was one of the hardest experiences I ever had to be out there and to show up with everything that I had, because I didn't know how to do that. And I would go to these sales meetings and I would watch these presenters and I'm going, how do they do that? How can they be that way? And then I realized that the ones who were presenting were also the ones who were making the money. And so here I am in the back row, you know, huddled into myself saying, gee, I wish I could do that. And I thought, you know, things have got to change. And so I slowly learned how to overcome what I'm going to call that kind of an upbringing. But I was always very careful when I went back home not to let that part of me come out too much, because I knew what I was going to hear. You know, I could hear my mother saying, oh, there she goes again. You know, she was always like that. Yeah. So to counter all of that, I would be very careful as to who I came out to. Well, you know what happens when you do that is that, you know, now you're having to figure out, you know, where am I? Is it okay to be who I am or not? You know, so I was always trying to figure out where I was and who I was with and was it okay or not. And I finally said, you know what, God, I can't do this anymore. I have to be who I am. So if I'm going to get up and make a fool of myself, then so be it. You and I are going to do it together. So it wasn't until after I got into the ministry that I decided that I was going to become not only a master teacher, but I was going to get these principles of religious science so placed in my life that everything was going to work for me because of it. So I finally said, you know what, God? You and I are going to do this together. And you and I are either going to rise together or we're going to fall together. And I'm okay with whichever decision we make. So I decided I was always going to show up to do whatever it is that I needed to do. Because I realized that that's where my gift was. As much as my parents tried to tap it down, it wasn't about to be tapped down for very long. So as many times as my mother said, Cindy, will you please sit down and be quiet? I'm now in a profession where I can talk as much as I want to. And who knew? Who knew that I'd be doing it worldwide or internationally now? You know, with our new presence on the website, we can go international now. So use this time of what I'm going to call this morphic field to assist you in not only making your dreams come true, but to be able to put yourself in a place where everything always works. And allow yourself to believe in yourself just a little bit more, whatever that is. And allow yourself to experience this holiday season in a way that absolutely delights and surprises you, because that's the way God operates. So let's put some of this into practice. So as we turn our attention inwardly and upwardly to that place that Beth opened up for us in her opening invocation treatment, that we realize that we're in very sacred, holy space. And it's so because we're here and we declare it to be so. So we feel this wonderful love moving in, through, around, and for us because we know that we are sustained, maintained, and loved by God. So let's open up our hearts. Let's open up our minds to be able to experience more of what this love is all about. To know that this season was created for each one of us as a reminder every year to be able to experience more of who and what we are and to experience all of it just a little differently. To be able to say yes to God, to say yes to life in a way that allows us to be totally out there, to be totally who and what we are, and to realize that God created us perfect, whole and complete, and absolutely amazing. So I know for each one of us that as we identify with this glorious love inside, that it bubbles up and out and it shows up in every area of our life. And so I know for each one of us that no matter what it is that we are experiencing this holiday season, that life expands for us, it multiplies for us, that all of our dreams come true, that we get exactly what it is that we have been wanting to experience, and that all of love, all of life, everything we've ever, ever wanted to experience is right here for us. And so I declare for each one of us, and I accept for each one of us, the very highest and the very best that we can possibly imagine for ourselves. So I know that each one of us is extremely prosperous. I know for each one of us that we are extremely healthy. And I also know for each one of us that all of our relationships are filled with love, understanding, and a greater sense of what we are. And so I know for us that as we accept all of this, and that as we put more attention and more thought into our lives, that life creates for us in a way that each one of us can experience our Christmas miracle. To realize that we may be celebrating the birth of Jesus, but we are also celebrating a new birth of thought within each one of us. And so we take that new thought and we allow it to expand, to know that we are guided, directed, and protected by this glorious power that we have inside of us, which we call God. And so I know for each one of us that the words that I have spoken are the truth as I know it to be. I accept it, and in doing so, I live it, I love it, I celebrate it, and together we say, and so it is.